God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. All right, if you need numbers or help connecting, send a chat to one of the hosts and we can help you with that. The preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we are discussing steps 8 and 9. And please welcome our panel this evening. David F. from here in Norfolk, and Kristen from North Carolina. I will read the first paragraph, and then each of the panel will share for a few moments. Steps 8 and 9, part 2, page 80. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. And Crystal, would you like to go first?
Sure, that'd be great, Mike, thank you. Hello, everybody, my name is Crystal Halligan and I am an alcoholic. I didn't know how to have relationships, even at this point, even when I had gotten to steps 8 and 9, I was broken. When it came to relationships of any sort, friendships, I didn't know how to be a friend. I didn't know how to be a lover. I didn't know how to be a wife. I didn't know how to be a mother. Even though I was a lot of those things, I didn't know how to participate in a relationship in a way that was not selfish and self-centered. I wanted what I wanted. And if you didn't give it to me, then you pretty much were wiped off the face of my brain. Like that's just the way it worked for me. I like forgot you existed on the planet. So in coming to this place where I've written this fourth step, right, and I'm taking a look at my inventory, I'm taking a look at my resentments, I'm taking a look at my fears, I'm taking a look at this sex inventory. You know, when I come to this place of understanding my role and my mistakes and my faults in dealing with these relationships, it was all pretty much came down to this series of the same thing. It was very repetitive. It was that I wanted so desperately to be liked. I wanted, my self-esteem was so low and affected all of these decisions that I made, getting involved with people that didn't build me up, that had nothing for me, that didn't make me a better person. None of these things. I wasn't thinking about any of those things. I was just thinking about getting what I needed. And I utilized these people for what I found them to be worth, and then I would toss them away. And the important thing that I got out of this part, when I get to steps 8 and 9, and I'm thinking about what I've done, becoming willing to make these amends, and then walking into making amends to those who I have harmed. I was really hard on myself. I'm sure other people are too, but I was extremely hard on myself and beat myself over the head because it was another form of ego for me. If I can think it's like my ego tells me I'm greater than or less than everything in my life. And what God does for me is God brings me back to this place where I'm equal to you and everyone else on the planet. And I was able to come to this place in dealing with relationships. And, you know, I became the girl who understands. I wasn't involved with the girl who understands. I was the girl who understood and involved myself with people who I thought I could make feel better, which inevitably just built my ego up. So coming to this place, realizing that it's nothing but ego, understanding that the relationships that I have were not based off of anything but selfish and self-centeredness, I come to this place of kind of being empty and not wanting to make sure that the kids are, I'm in my car outside of the house and the kids are standing at the window saying, "Hi, Mama. Hi, Aunt Crystal. Hi, Mama." Hi, guys. So I come to this place and I'm recognizing how selfish and self-centered I am and what I need to do to make that right. Coming to this ideal, you know, we'll be potentially talking about an ideal. I come to this ideal where, what am I willing to give to each and every relationship that I have, right? Because at first it was like, well, I want this and this and this and this and this, you know, out of my relationships. I'm not willing to do this. I need somebody who's going to compromise, blah, 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 blah. But it was still just a list of selfish and self-centered things. And my sponsor asked me this all-important question that she always asks me. And she said, "Crystal," you know, she always asked me the question, "What are you getting out of this?" And she said, "If you're getting something out of it, then you're probably not giving anything to it." And because that's my MO, you know, if I'm getting something out of it, I ain't giving you shit. I'm gonna hold that back so that I can get more. And I come to this place where I'm understanding that. And I'm understanding that my relationships and the ideal going forward is that it's what percentage of myself am I willing to give the other party. And sometimes that's a really hard thing to come back to, especially nowadays. It's like, you know, I'll get into a fight with my husband in my, you know, current relationship. And I'm just like, well, he's an idiot. And then I'll look at him and he'll be all shiny and sparkly because that's what God does for me. And then I'm like, what am I willing to give to this? It's like, I was just looking at what I needed, or have I been willing to give of myself to this relationship? And that's where I'm at with that today. Thanks.
Thank you, Crystal. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is David. I'm grateful to be here and grateful to be sober today. And I'm just thrilled to see your face, Crystal, and listen to you share. And I love where you went with it. Just the whole selfishness and self-centeredness thing. This paragraph starts off with this sentence, you know, the chances are we have domestic troubles. I'm like, how do you know that? You know, the chances are. I think about it because at the end of my drinking, I had pushed everybody away. There was no girlfriend left. There was a job that I was hanging on to barely. And I was basically living just to drink. And so I didn't have too many domestic troubles except for, you know, I had to talk to myself when I got here. But when I read this paragraph, I think about my mother and I think about my father. I think about the things that I'm capable of saying and doing under the influence of alcohol. I think of my little brother. I think of my little sister. I think about the woman who we spent the good part of our 20s together. We celebrated our 21st birthdays together. She got to have a front row seat at the very worst that my alcoholism brings to the table. And there was plenty of all manner of domestic violence and infidelity on both of our parts. And it was chaos with sprinkled with hope. just enough hope. Maybe until the next debauch, you know. So I don't have this. I don't relate particularly to the secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands, but I know what it's like to feel remorse over the betrayal that I'm capable of with the people that I supposedly love under the influence of alcohol and in sobriety. That's all I got on that. Thanks.
All right, thank you, David. Next section in the reading, page 81. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take. All right, Crystal.
I remember when I got to this portion and I'm sitting with my sponsor and we're going over my list and I'm considering, you know, after I have found my faults and mistakes, I'm considering who I have harmed and who I need to make amends to. And I remember that this guy that played a big role in my life was on the top of my list, and there were a couple other guys on the top of my list, and I took my list, you know, I take my list to my sponsor and I'm like, okay, here's what I believe that I need to do. And she looked at me and she said, nope, I don't think you need to make amends to any of these people. And my jaw dropped. I was like, what are you talking about? I've caused harm. She said, are you sure you caused harm, you know, to them, to this point where you need to go cause more harm by, you know, entering yourself into their lives again? Like, because what do you want to get? And that was all, man, I swear to God, she still asks me that question all the time. What do you want to get? So what are you trying to get out of this? And the honest truth was to rekindle a relationship with these people because they fed my ego, because they fed that selfish and self-centered part of me that made me feel good about myself because of the human reliance. So I come to this place and I'm like, oh my God. And I'm looking at this whole list of guys and it's just a bunch of guys on my list. And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm really just trying. Because I so desperately needed attention. Even then, when I was still recovering, still trying to create this list and make these amends, I was still ridiculously sick. I mean, I'm pretty sure that my brain didn't become clear until I was about 3 years sober. So I'm still doing the very best I can and trying to follow the guidance of somebody like my sponsor who had done it before me and other people that I respected in the program when I'm going to do these things, like make a big, huge mistake of harming this person even more by just dumping myself in their life as it is today. And I was shown clearly what my next steps were to be when I sat back and waited. And for me, it was not about waiting an incredibly long time. It was just about waiting long enough until I was shown clearly by my higher power what my next step was with each of these individuals. I wanted to make important amends to these guys because I didn't want to make amends to my mom. Because I didn't want to make amends to the people who I really harmed and really needed to humble myself with. Because this is a very humbling experience. The one that dents the ego, the one that takes a notch out of the ego is the amends that I really need to pay attention to, because those are the ones that I have to, that are going to ensure my sobriety walking forward. Those are the ones that I'm going to have to drink over later if I don't get them out. And with that, I'll pass.
Yeah. Since I have trouble relating to the first reading, I have trouble relating to the second reading too, you know, because that particular situation wasn't on the table, but like Crystal was pointing out, it really, I think what it emphasizes is the idea that we're not to save our own skin at another's expense, you know, that I can't cause more harm. I can't get free by causing you pain and misery and discomfort and disclosing things to you which would harm you. My mother doesn't need to know that I was an IV drug user, for instance. I see no good that could come from that, but I'm just being honest, you know. And I came at this, my first cut through this, and probably most cuts after that, I look for the low-hanging fruit. I look for the amends that are going to benefit me, because I want to be welcome at the Thanksgiving table. I want to stop getting those. I want to stop getting those envelopes through certified mail. I want my problems to go away. And of course, I've got to go out and find her to make my amends. And of course, I'm thinking she'll be so impressed with my spiritual demonstration that we'll pass at least a lovely afternoon together. This is me. This is what I'm thinking. I don't even know if I could even admit that to myself back then, but those are my motives. I'm still coming at this very selfishly. Thank God for sponsorship. Thank God for, yeah, the exact same thing was said to me. Yeah. The best thing you can do for her, David, is leave her alone. I'm like, once again, sponsor has a plan that's not my plan. I got to get a new sponsor. You know, this guy doesn't understand me. But leave her alone. And how about you go about being a son to your mother? You got a job, don't you, David? Yeah, I do. All right. And you got some amends to some past employers to make, right? Yeah. Well, while you're getting ready for those, how about you do your job while you're there? Every day. Okay. So, I don't know. You guys made a lot of this stuff so simple for me. How about you take the life that you have right now and serve it? You know, how about you go ahead and work when you're at work? How about you pick up the phone and call your mom? Instead of calling me to bitch about the sink full of dishes, why don't you just go ahead and do those dishes, bud? How about that? So little by slowly. Thanks. That's all I got on that.
All right. Thank you both. Our next section, page 81. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents for whom for years he is so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing."
And I'll say, man, I was that guy that walked up out of the cellar. I've already said that I was still kind of hazy until I was probably about 3 years sober. And that's most definitely the truth. Some things that should have been very clear to me, from the get-go, did not become clear to me until it was pretty much like handed to me on a platter. And saying, "Crystal, this is probably not the way you should mother your children. You should probably make all of your important decisions based on what's best for your kids." And I'm like, "What? Like, that's a novel idea. Like, I have no clue what that means." And once I started doing that thing, and there were many instances like that, you know, "Crystal, that you probably shouldn't sleep with that guy on the first date. You probably shouldn't have your boobs and your butt hanging out of a dress when you're in a meeting. How are people going to take you seriously?" You know, there were lots of things that I didn't know were wrong until they were wrong. Until I knew they were wrong. I always, you know, hear this thing and it says, you know, a problem isn't a problem until it becomes a problem. And isn't that the truth? And that's exactly what this paragraph speaks of to me. You know, I have caused so much harm to these amazing people who have loved me, you know, through my drinking, through my drug using, through my lying, cheating, stealing, abusing, using. Because that's who I am. I'm an abuser. I'm a user. These are the things that my drinking takes me to. And then I come to this place where I'm seeing all of this stuff clearly. I'm seeing this human and their faults and mistakes that I don't like about myself. And then I'm watching this woman who is my sponsor show me through her actions how these things work, how relationships work. I remember she would, when her, we would be meeting and her husband would come home from work and she would say, "Excuse me for a moment." And she would stand up and she would greet him at the door with a hug and a kiss. And I'm like, whoa, that was like mind blowing to me. That somebody would stop doing something they wanted to be doing to do this other thing, which didn't seem so exciting. Like, I would have just ignored my husband and let him walk through the door and continue. I'd be like, "Hey, husband," waved at him and just been like, "Okay," and continued on with what I was doing. And so when she showed me how to do these things, it kind of redirected my thoughts. I still don't get up and hug and kiss my husband when I walk in the house, but there are other things that I can do, just to give him a little bit of love where he might not have experienced any for the day, you know, and this is about that constant thought of others. This is about how it's changed. And for me today, it's so funny. Like, I remember making amends to my ex-husband. He was my ex-husband at the time, my first husband. And he was, and I made amends to him for many things about the way I treated him, about the things that I expected from him, the expectations I had of him, the nasty things I said to him, the way that I abused him. And my daughter, my 18-year-old daughter, graduated on Monday from high school. And my ex-husband, my current husband, my ex-husband's mother and father, and my current husband's mother and father were all there together, hugging and kissing and having lunch. And everybody was very excited to be a part of this great big family. And that is so, looks so strange to other people. Like, I had a woman that was standing next to us, a friend of my daughter's, her mother. And she's like, "So wait, that's your ex-husband and that's your real husband, your current husband?" And they're hugging and hanging out, saying, "I love you." And that's a total result of this program. I mean, years later, you know, and I would have never guessed that that is the promises coming true in my life, but it is. It makes my life so easy that I don't have to tiptoe around the two men in my life because I've got kids with both of them. And that is what has, that is a promise, a result of these steps 8 and 9, what I had to go and do, the amends that I had to make, brought us to a place where we can be together and be in love and be happy, all of us. Thanks.
Thank you, Crystal. Yeah, I really wanted drinking to be the problem. I really, really wanted drinking to be the problem. And and I flew under that flag for a long time. I just knew if I could stop drinking and I could stop doing all these drugs and everything in my life would just straighten right out and everything would be fine, you know? And, but I am just like the man who came up out of the cyclone cellar and I'm sitting in the wreckage and listen to this stuff. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted and selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. Not even drinking, man, just selfish and inconsiderate habits, you know? And now here I am, you know, uncomfortably sober. I've been through the inventory now. I'm starting to see like, oh my God, you know, God, I was such a tough sell on selfishness, guys. I really thought that selfishness was greediness. And turns out I am greedy. But I didn't see myself as greedy. I see myself as generous and so you got to fight with me, but it's that self-obsession that what's in it for me. If I do this for you, then I'll get that. If I behave this way, if I say that, wonder if I do that, I'm constantly running the show, manipulating everybody around me. The truth doesn't have to have anything to do with what's coming out of my mouth. What's coming out of my mouth has everything to do with me getting what I want. You know, whether that's your forgiveness or a raise or whatever it is I'm looking for, I got a case and I'm running my mouth for it. And these people have been putting up with me all my life. When the time came to make amends to my mom, and now I'm kind of aware of this stuff and little cracks in my armor are starting to develop and a little bit of light's getting in there. Like a little bit of light, like maybe I am the problem. I'm not totally willing to sign off on it just yet, you know, but I went to make amends to my mom and she didn't want to hear any of it. She didn't want to rehash. She was there, you know, she was there in the courtrooms. She was there on the other side of a bedroom door that I kicked off the hinges. She was there for all of that. She was there not knowing whether her son was going to come home or not this week. The poor thing, all she really wanted was to raise a healthy kid who, you know, I wouldn't even go to school. I was in 10th grade. I was like, I'm out. I'm out on the school thing. That's not happening anymore. And I was too big for her to drag out of bed or take to school, you know. And poor thing. I worried her to death. And she didn't want to hear any of that stuff. And all she said to me was, David, all I've ever wanted is for you to be happy. It's all I've ever wanted. And do you know that I left from there thinking I got away with that one? The first thought, selfish. She doesn't want the money back. Yeah. First thought, selfish. But I keep coming back with you people. She caught me on the way out of the door. She said, honey, I would like it if you'd return my phone calls, though. I was like, oh, yeah, Ma, I got you. And I go down the road. And now I get a phone call from my mom. I got a spiritual dilemma on my hands, right? Well, I've been taking my mother's phone calls. And then what occurred to me years later, not occurred to me. If I say it occurred to me, what I mean is somebody told me or I heard it in a meeting. You know, it like wasn't my idea for sure. But the idea got into me. She said she wanted you to be happy. Well, what's an action I can take? You know, pretend to be happy in front of my mom. That's, of course, my first thought. But what I could do is I could just stop complaining to my mom. You know, I could, instead of calling my mom and bitching about my life or telling her what's wrong or bringing my little broken wagon, asking her to fix it for me. You know, I brought her peace and contentment. Oh, things are good, Mom. This is what's going on with the kids. This is what's going on with the family. Maybe we could, you know, I brought her some good news, you know, just something that simple, right? And with my dad, I got to tell you about my dad. I couldn't face my dad, you know. When I used to tell this story, I'd always say anytime my dad and I got together, one of us would leave in tears, right? But the truth of that is I always left in tears. I don't think he ever did. It was technically true that one of us left in tears. But I wrote an honest letter to my dad. And I admitted that I had lied to him, that I had taken his money under false pretenses, that I knew that I had embarrassed him in front of his friends. I knew that it was embarrassing to him to have to fire his son from his business. My father was a veterinarian and his firstborn son couldn't keep away from the kitty medicine. I've got his name. I'm a junior. He used to be so proud of me and he had to fire me. So I wrote him that letter, you know, and I selfishly expected for him to confess all his sins, you know, because I'd been confessing his sins for years. And he didn't. He didn't admit any fault. He agreed with me with all those things that happened. Yes, they were embarrassing. But then he said, probably no more than I embarrassed my own father. And he said, I don't know how many years I've got left to live, but how about you and I go for the good from here on out? I read that. And I, again, first thought wrong. I thought I did it wrong. I did the amends wrong. I didn't feel great relief or any of that stuff. But again, just keep coming back, David. Keep praying. Keep moving in the direction. And all of a sudden, the idea gets to me that we have a new contract. The new contract is let's go for the good from here on out. And we started walking that off. Me and my brother used to go down to Florida. I used to tell the story and say we'd take my dad fishing. What that means is we'd get my dad to buy us plane tickets. and he would charter the boat and we would all go fishing together, right? But my brother and I didn't have any money anyway. So we let my dad take us fishing. And those became fantastic times. When my dad died, he and I were the best of friends. And none of that happened overnight, you know. But what absolutely left was the guilt, the shame, the remorse that I felt, the recrimination, the resentment that I had for him. Somehow in admitting my faults to him got me off the hook. And it let him off the hook with me. And we had a whole different life together after that. Yeah, that's it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you both. Next section, page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. Our remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk to them incessantly about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. All right, Crystal?
I tell you, it would really make me angry sometimes in the very beginning after I made a couple of these amends when I would get questioned. Like I made the amends to my mom and then she would still doubt some of the things that I said. Like because I made the amends to her, I would automatically be relieved and now was never at any time in my life a liar that she would have to question. You know, that would happen to me with several people in my family that I had lied to, you know, but I'll tell you what, this period of reconstruction we're talking about, I'll tell you, my amends to my children have probably been from the time that I actually made, and I did make a physical verbal amends to them. They were 7 and 9, I believe. And I had to speak in words that they could understand about the things that I had done wrong. And a lot of it, my youngest at the time didn't remember, but my oldest did. And I made some pretty huge mistakes. And I get the opportunity today, you know, I had to tell them, I had to set them down and tell them that, you know, I'm sorry I didn't show up that Mother's Day. I had drank too much and I was passed out. And that you called me like 27 times in a row and I didn't answer the phone because I was asleep. And I know all you wanted to do was spend time with me that day, but I couldn't show up. Because I didn't have the ability to do so. I'm sorry that time that I, you know, all of these things, I did these things to you and I need to know how to make that right. And, you know, they looked at me because I believe that my oldest was, they had started crying. I was crying. They were crying. Everybody was crying. It was a big girly cry fest. And they looked at me and they said, "Mom, you're the best mom we've ever had." And I was like, well, you know, in the back of my head, I'm like, well, I'm the only mom they've ever had. And then I once again remembered that my mother-in-law had to pick up pieces for me when I wasn't available. She had to mother my children when I couldn't. And so I wasn't the only mother they ever had. But my children were so very forgiving. And even today, I get to show up and be the mother that God intended me to be every day, as long as I'm willing to take these few simple actions, right? As long as I'm willing to continue a daily conscious contact with a power greater than myself, as long as I'm willing to admit my faults, as long as I'm willing to make reparations for those mistakes. And I'm going to tell you, my kids are amazing young people. And that was a direct result of being willing to just showing up. Actually, it's because I showed up broken and other people were willing to hold my hand and walk me through this thing. Right. And I come to this place where I'm understanding of my faults and I'm understanding that I need to admit these to others. And I love what David said in the last, about the last paragraph, about this freedom that it grants me. Yes, it grants me the freedom to not be guilty and miserable and hate myself so that I can actually be the mother that they deserve. Right? I get to show up today and be the mother that my new baby, my two-year-old, and my older children deserve, because as a direct result of the people in this program showing me how it's done, as a direct result of having a sponsor that was willing to tell me the truth, as a direct result of pursuing a relationship with a power greater than myself on a daily basis and being willing to admit when I'm wrong. And I'm done.
Thank you, Crystal. I don't know about you guys, but I don't like phrases like long period of reconstruction. They will change in time. I'm a get rich quick kind of guy, you know, hit and split. Let's check the box, move on. I'll do the work, but I want the benefits right now. Let's make it happen, you know. And I'm the only one. But this thing, our behavior will convince them more than our words, and that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. I want a medal after I'm 6 months sober. You know what I mean? I want a parade, because it's hard. It's hard for a guy like me to stay sober. Don't you know how hard it is? And I operated for a long time, as I already said, that thinking that that would be enough. But it's my behavior, not my words. And all my life, you know, you guys said this to me when I got here, and it's always stuck with me. All my life, I've judged myself by my intentions, and the world has been judging me by my actions. I intend to show up on time. I intend to say nice things to people. I intend to behave myself. I'm a good guy. But you guys are like, yeah, that's great. But what you're doing is not showing up, not behaving yourself, and saying things that hurt people's feelings. Yeah, but I didn't mean to, you know, I didn't mean to. So I got to take the lead. And I'll share this because this has really served me very, very well. And once again, it's another idea that I didn't come up with. But my sponsor was super clear with me, you know, this idea of a remorseful mumbling that we're sorry won't fill the bill at all. I also think it's fun too. Like, we ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it for a brief shiny moment. I think, oh good, this is my chance to straighten everybody out. But it was pointed out to me that the past as we now see it, David, comes from your inventory. We now see your past based on the inventory that you've done. Remember the selfishness, the dishonesty, the resentment, the fear? That's how we now see the path. Oh, that's different. But anyway, my sponsor just said, listen, David, you're done being sorry. You've been sorry all your life. Now you get to go out and be wrong. And he said it like it was a privilege, you know, like I get to go out and be wrong. And I got to tell you guys, being wrong is one of the most freeing, fantastic things that I've ever been able to practice, to the point where it's pretty close to the tip of my tongue these days. I'm pretty quick to be wrong about stuff, because guess what? I'm often quite wrong about lots of things. I got a whole world in my head that makes sense to me, and I often find out that that's not even happening at all, not even close. And it's very disappointing, you know, but being wrong, man, if I can come to you, because my idea of an apology when I got here was, hey, Bob, I totally screwed you over the other day, man. I shouldn't have said that stuff to you, but here's all the things that you were doing that provoked me into that action. You know, like I've always got a clause, like I shouldn't have treated you that way, but here's all the extenuating, what does Bob Darrell call it? Guilty with an explanation, you know? And you guys aren't interested in any of that stuff, you know? And if I can show up and just be wrong, hey, Bob, I lied right to your face the other day. You asked me a question, the truth scared me. So I popped off with something that absolutely wasn't true. I was wrong. And if you can just shut up there, sometimes people start admitting their faults. Sometimes people start admitting they were wrong about stuff. Some people also admit that they knew you were lying. Oh my God. But being wrong lets all the air out of it. I had somebody just the other day came down the hall. I had screwed this thing up. She had told me how to execute this one thing and how she wanted it to be and what time she wanted it to be that way. And I whiffed it. I transposed some numbers. You know, I just got it 180 degrees wrong. And it was embarrassing and it caused her a problem. She's coming down the hall. She's in my doorway now. She doesn't like conflict. She doesn't want to have to come down the hall to have this conversation with me. She's a little pissed. She's like, David, that thing that we talked about, you know, that meeting. And I just cut her off. And I said, Teresa, that was my fault. I just whiffed that. I transposed a couple of numbers and I got the whole thing wrong. And I know that caused you trouble. And then I just shut up. And then the next thing she wanted to talk about was, well, you know, what we could do to keep this from happening next time. We started talking about systems. We started talking about things about the future, things that we could do next time together. And we worked through it and it was perfectly lovely, you know, but I didn't take her time, energy, and professionalism explaining why I transposed these numbers. You see, I have a little learning disability. And, you know, I was abused when I was a kid. You know, I was just wrong. And there's so much freedom in being wrong. So I'm getting better at it. Thank you.
All right, next section. Page 83, there may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile and scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. And the last section, page 83. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Okay, Crystal.
Thanks, Mike. So there were no people that I couldn't go to. My great grandmother had passed, but that was prior to my drinking days. However, one of my amends was to an employer, and I had done my very best, made purposeful mistakes in paperwork, and created unrest among the employees by spreading rumors. I had done everything I possibly could as a faulty human being to destroy this man's business. And he was my very first amends. And I was terrified because some of the things I had done, I could have gotten arrested for. And I didn't. I wanted there to be some reason why I couldn't go to him, so I could just write him a letter and or skip it all together. But he happened to end up being my first one. So I called and made the appointment. And I went to him and I told him about all these things that I had done. And how I knew that I had been wrong. And it was all of my reasonings were based in selfishness and self-centeredness because I thought that he had wronged me, which was not the truth at all. And he sat back, and I'm sitting here sweating bullets. I mean, I'm sweating bullets. I am waiting for him, like the red in his face, and that he was just going to start yelling at me, you know, because that's the kind of people that I had always involved myself with, were people that blew up. But this man, he said, "Crystal, would you like a glass of iced tea?" And I'm like, shit, he's trying to butter me up before he's going to go in and call the cops. And I'm just going to be sitting here drinking some tea and the cops are going to come and arrest my ass. So I'm like, no, I don't think I want any tea. Because I was terrified. And he just sat back and he sighed and he said, "Crystal, did you honestly think that I didn't know that you were doing things like that?" And that was the second time in my sobriety that I have this unreasonable expectation that people actually believe the BS that comes out of my mouth. Like, for real. Like, I think that I'm such a good liar that these people believe every lie and untruth that comes out of my mouth. And so I just, because my sponsor said, "You be quiet." So I was quiet. I didn't even answer his question. And he continued to talk in a very peaceful and kind and generous way. And he said, the last thing he said to me is, "Crystal, I could care less about the things you tried to do to sabotage my business." He said, "I am just grateful that you are better. And I hope that you keep continuing to do what you're doing, because you will continue to get even better." And I left there in tears, because what I had been shown was God's grace and mercy through another human. And that it was, I know it was God's plan for me to do that first, so that I could have that experience so that I would keep doing the rest of my amends. Because if the first one had gone badly, I would have just given up. But I'm going to tell you that it's those things, that experience repeated in many different forms and fashions. And then I've made amends where people are just like, "What I would ask for you, what would make this right, is that you never talk to me again. You never contact me again. You completely stay out of my life to the best of your ability." And then I've had people that didn't want to have anything to do with me, that wouldn't even answer my text or email or call to them to set up an appointment. But I know that I had done my very best to do what I could to make those things as right as I could, to make those amends, to amend my behavior, and then amend my behavior going forward. Because amends aren't truly making things right. It's amending my behavior, not just in that instance, but also going forward off into the new world where I am trying to practice these amazing principles in my life that I have no clue how to practice at the time, you know. And then I get to this place where my job moves me to Richmond, and then my husband's job moves us to North Carolina, and things just fall into place. And it's these beautiful developments in my life, these amazing things. And I get to meet amazing people along the way, and I get to make great friendships, and I get to come, and because somebody, you know, said, "Hey, I think you should call Crystal and have her speak for your group." And I'm like, Oh God, people, it's like, I still in my head, I'm like, why would they want to do that? But I'm so grateful for the opportunity to be of service. And I'm still desperate for it, which is incredible to me. I am desperate for the opportunities to be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous, because Alcoholics Anonymous, the people in it have given me so much through the gods of their understanding, whatever that looks like for you and all of the people that are in my life today. And so this painstaking way that we go about doing this comes around to this beautiful web, spider web of love that happens between us sober alcoholics, where we're just reaching out, trying to touch somebody else and help them out. And that to me is the absolute most beautiful part of my life. You know, that because I have been shown this way of life, because these promises are slowly, sometimes quickly coming true in my life, that I get to participate in my own life, in my beautiful family, and then I get to participate in God's family. And, you know, I'm super grateful for that opportunity. Thanks, David. Pass the mic.
Oh, I'd love to put the mic down there, Crystal. I'll do 1 minute. I got one story. One short, I've never told it before, but maybe it fits here. Maybe it's short enough. Maybe it's got something worth hearing in it. But this idea that there may be some wrongs that we can never fully right. There are, of course, there were people who were dead that I couldn't make direct amends to. But there's a fair number of people who are alive that there's absolutely no amount of money or love or change that could actually make right what I did. I'll just leave it there. But we don't worry about it if we can honestly say to ourselves we'd write it if we could. You know, if I've gotten down to the causes and conditions and I in my heart know that I would do it differently, I would conduct myself differently, that I have nothing but regret for this, and I would make it right if I could, then the spiritual instruction is to not worry about it. My best friend, Tommy Grancy, first dead body I ever saw, he was my best friend. I loved him and he loved me. But before he died, we were arguing about something. And the last thing that I said to him was, go F yourself. Those are the last words I said to my brother, and now he's dead. And it bugged me for years and years and years. And I did graveside letters. I prayed, I wrote, I shared. That never left me. That disturbed feeling, that regret, that was the last thing that I said to Tommy. And it was absolutely in the context of the 11th step, just sitting, trying to be quiet, trying to connect with God, trying to meditate, trying to practice some of these other steps. A simple thought came to me. And it's just in the last 10 years. I've been carrying that around since I was 17 years old. And the simple thought that came to me was, Tommy knew that you loved him. Just like I know that I loved him, he knew that I loved him. I know that he knew that I loved him. We just had a little fight. And it's still unfortunate, but it's peaceful. It's okay. I can't fully make that right, but somehow it's okay. There still is love. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you both. All right, Rob. We are a little short on time. So moving along, simple actions as a home group. Home group members, please raise your hand. If you are interested in joining our home group or are in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting to connect with any of the folks that had their hands raised. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you to not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, someone will be available in the Zoom room when we close the meeting. Please stick around to talk with us or email info@simpleactions.net with questions. And Morgan, would you read a vision for you?
I got you.
I will put that up. I appreciate it, brother.
Awesome. David, Crystal, thank you both so much. I'm Morgan. I'm an alcoholic. This is a vision for you from page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right, thank you, Morgan. And David, if you'd be so kind to unmute everyone or allow everyone to unmute so we could thank you and Crystal. A lot of powerful sharing tonight. Thank you both.
Thank you both. It was good to see you, Crystal.
Thank you, guys. That was incredible.
Thank you, Crystal. I love you so much.
Great sharing from both of you.
I love you, too.
Thank you for all your service. That was spectacular.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, great meeting. All right, well, thanks to all who participated this evening. And for those of you that will, we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done,
on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power, and the glory,
forever.
Amen.
Yes.
Thank you both so much.
Good job, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, man. It's good to see everybody.
CC, I love you, girl.